everyone, and welcome to Minute 31 of Season 10 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again this season is my good friend, Eddie Eith. Welcome back to the show, Eddie.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me back.
I always love talking to you about movies. You know, you and I are kindred spirits when it comes to that, about talking about movies and the fact that once again we are in your hometown is pretty good, you know.
Yes. And this is a great New York movie and showcases a lot of great New York character actors. I'm excited to get into the, you know, and the personalities feel very New York.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to that. You know, that's one of the things I like that we talked about that in Die Hard 3, Die Hard with a Vengeance. We talked all about the New York City, and you know that was 21 years after this movie came out. So things are a little different since then also, from that perspective. But yeah. It's definitely fun. So let's start with my opening question that I ask everybody is, what is your history with the movie The Taking of Pelham 123?
Well, I originally saw the 2009 remake with Denzel Washington and John Travolta. Which, you know, I don't think is a bad movie. I enjoyed it. An actor named John Lavelle, who went to the same high school as me, had a small part in that movie.
Oh, really?
Yes. He's like he's one of the cops. From there, I mean, that's where I probably first became aware of the property and I rented this on Netflix back when Netflix used to mail you DVDs.
Wow.
Yes. I rented the original and fell in love with it. Especially, you know, Walter Matthau, I think, is fantastic in that. And as I said, just all of those New York personalities. It reminds me of uncles and people my parents and my grandparents' age. You know, just felt like a lot of familiar faces.
Oh, wow.
Up.
That's really cool. That's great. And is it something that you've seen often since then? Or, was this just your first rewatch?
No, I've seen it several times since then. This is probably time number 4 or 5 running through it all.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. But never looking at it this way.
No.
you get the special treatment of being able to go through it minute by minute.
You know, absolutely.
Why not? All right. So minute 31 begins with Carol responding sarcastically and ends with Frank complaining again. I've always loved him. I mean, Frank Carroll is a great character, and you know the way that he's played in this movie is just so perfect. You know, Dick O'Neill just does a wonderful job with this character because you know he's the what's it called, the train master. You know,
yes.
sounds like coming from the Ghostbusters, but whatever. But you know. I'm the keymaster. Are you the gatekeeper? You know, or things like that. But the way that he, you know, constantly talks to Mr. Blue when he is the one who's in charge is just great.
Yes.
You know, I mean, even I mean, this minute opens that way. You know, we ended things on Friday with Mr. Blue starting to tell, you know, a little bit of what they want. And, you know, he says, we want $1 million from the mayor. And I mean, this minute begins with him saying that'll be the day.
Yes. Yeah. And the thing I love about him and also, Kaz Dolowitz, who I'm sure you've talked about her. Yes.
Kaz.
Both characters, have no time. There's no fear, and they have no time for this nonsense. Immediately, it's like, what the heck are you doing? We're trying to run a city here. Why are you just getting in the way? And there's no sense of caution or trepidation. Just immediately, like, why are you bothering me with this? This is insane. And I feel like, most people would immediately would get scared and worried about how we're doing, and they're just focused on the job and literally making sure the trains are running on time.
Well, I think part of it also is I don't know if it's 100% that they don't have fear. I think that they're just looking. I think they just don't take it seriously.
Yeah,
I
that's
think that
true.
they basically both are saying, "Look, we've been in the train business X number of years, and I don't really care. Why would we'll see it later in the week. Once the Kaz's response again, a little spoiler for what's going to happen on Friday, but." As basically says, why don't you go hijack an airplane like normal people? Like they don't even have any way of stopping themselves from responding in a very coarse way. Again, here he says that'll be the day. I think it was last week where Frank called him a maniac, and it's like. Or maybe it'll be next week. I don't remember when it is, but it's the idea that they don't feel that they have anything to be concerned about by speaking their minds here. So I don't know if it's that they don't have fear. I think it's the idea that they deal with so much crap all the time that okay, this is just something else, and this is my job to deal with it, to make sure, as you said, to make sure that the trains run on time. That's their ultimate goal.
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
I think they both also take it very personally also.
Oh,
You know,
sure.
which one of the things I love about seeing the fact that they take it personally is if, we see that these two guys especially have so much respect and honor for their work, for the train system and everything like that. That, okay, this is my duty. Between this hour and this hour, I'm in charge of making sure that everything works and goes on time. So I like the way that they do that.
Yes, and just that bluster of just who do you think you are?
That's right. So yeah, I really like the way that they do that. I think it works. And it helps make things feel even more genuine and believable. By the way that these characters are acting the whole time. And we will have the counterbalance of that with Garber, who also doesn't necessarily take everything so seriously, but he realizes that this is a serious situation.
Yes, he realizes the gravity of the situation.
That's right. And
Yes, yeah,
he's able
yeah.
to throw in jokes every so often, which helps make the whole movie more entertaining. But he's not as blatant as Frank is.
Yes. And since this is the first time, I'm getting to talk about Walter Matthau here, could I just say the Tweed in this movie is there's a whole sense all the robbers are dressed in tweed jackets, in tweed overcoats, and Matthau is wearing a glorious tweed sport coat that I would, I might murder a small child to get. The red flannel shirt is probably a war crime in most European nations, but that jacket is very stylish.
Well, what about the yellow tie?
The yellow tie, well, I mean, the yellow tie is bright. Like it's almost like he's dressed the way you thought outlandish characters were drawn in comic books.
Yes.
You know, when
And you're a comic book fan, so you know that for sure. I mean, come on, go. You can even use the perfect analogy of Wolverine in yellow spandex. It's like, okay. And even in the X-Men movies, they made fun of that.
And especially, and you could kind of see, you saw earlier when he was touring the,
The
when he was
Japanese
giving the
businessman.
tour, yes, the Japanese businessman, the tour, that there is a sense of, I feel like there's a sense of boredom there, where it's just, he's been at this so long. A lot of the things he was saying felt rote. And he started to have fun once he thought that the businessmen didn't speak English.
Right.
And the minute this happens, he kind of, it's like the most exciting thing that's probably happened to him on the job in a decade. And
Besides finding a cantaloupe, they thought was a bomb.
yes. But but also he immediately jumps into cop mode and taking charge and really assessing the situation.
No, it's great. I mean, again, we had this already a few weeks ago when he was giving the tour and explaining all the different things that he's doing. There's a lot of things that a transit, I guess, inspector needs to deal with. So I like the way that they did that. This movie, I mean, we talked about this a few weeks ago, that the movie does a nice job of not jumping right into everything. The first few weeks of this podcast, the episodes have been slow burners. Allowing us to get an idea of who all these characters are, and the continuous fear.
And really kind of the machinations of the MTA,
Correct.
which I'm sure the technology has been upgraded in the years since, but
We'll get there.
I'm
We'll get there. I think. Is it later today or tomorrow? No, I think it's tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll talk a little bit more about the technology, because technology is something very fun to talk about here. All right.
And also I find it interesting, Mr. Blue is so cold and doesn't give Coral's taunts any time.
Nope, not at all. Not at all. He actually, and that's one of the things I like about Mr. Blue, is that he is able to keep his cool through most of this. And because he just doesn't care about anything that's going on.
And when Garber finally gets on the radio, there's no sense of relief or anything. It's like, okay, finally, he's strictly business and someone's finally taking him seriously and he could get out his demands.
And I love the way that in this minute, Walter Matthau plays this character, because when he's just listening to things, you see his facial expressions that he's, taking this all in. He's trying to figure out what it is that he needs to do here. So that, I mean, while they're sitting there after Frank, shouts out his taunt, then Mr. Blue just nonchalantly goes, "The time is now 2:13. The money must be in our hands no later than 3:13, 1 hour from now. If the money is not in our hands, we'll kill one hostage for every minute you're late." And then what's Frank's response? "Keep dreaming, maniac." And Mr. Blue is not fazed. He continues and goes, "Furthermore, if anyone attempts to interfere, anyone in any way, we'll begin killing the hostages immediately. Confirm, please." Garber doesn't feel that fazed about the whole thing. He just gets up and starts walking over to one of the stations to be able to respond. But I love, if you look in the background, there are two very important things. You First of all, throughout this minute, and I've pointed this out throughout the movie, and I will continue to point it out, hopefully, for most of the time, if it continues this way. The continuity is amazing, because the clock clearly looks as if it says that it's 2:13. We're not even talking about digital clocks. We're just talking about a regular face clock that the hands are in the right position. So that's just amazing because, most times in movies, you just avoid having a clock in the room so that you don't have to deal with this type of thing.
Absolutely.
But they deliberately
Absolutely.
do it. That's the one thing. And the second thing is that you see that everyone is now converging on Frank. This is like they're having a water cooler break at Frank's desk. Because I guess you can't move any other train, so at least not in the 28th Street station. So, these guys are all just standing around listening to what Frank has to say. And then Frank starts screaming at Garber as he's walking to one of the other stations. He goes, "Zach, Zach." And, Garber just ignores him and goes over to the station, pushes the button, and goes, "Palom 123, come in, please." And immediately Blue responds and goes, "This is Palom. Identify yourself, please." He goes, "Oh, this is Lieutenant Zachary Garber of the Transit Police." Again, I love the accent he uses here. "And identify yourself, please." On the one hand, he sounds very New Yorkish, but he does have a like a Boston type of twang to it, by the way that he says it.
Walter Matthau, he has a very unique speaking
That's right.
voice.
That's right.
Yes.
There's, I think it's maybe in the next week or two where he just says he instead of saying "shut up," he goes "shut up," that type of thing. So and Blue gives a great response. He goes, "I'm the man who stole your train." And Garber then tries to reason with him, and he goes, "Sir, there's no way you can get away with this. You are underground in a tunnel." And he goes, "Why do you concern yourself with that? At precisely 3:13, we are going to begin executing the hostages. Don't you think you'd better get in touch with the mayor and get back to me for my further instructions? Over and out." And then Coral screams out, "That son of a bitch has got me backed up all the way to the Bronx," which goes back to what we were saying before, that for him, this is just an inconvenience. That's it. He's not really concerned beyond that.
Garber seems to be the only person who's actually, concerned about the hostages on that train. Whereas everyone else in the room seems to be worried about getting the train out of the way so that they could keep the transit
Yeah,
going.
exactly. I like the way that this minute plays out because again, we see that the two main characters here, both of them, both Garber and Mr. Blue, are staying as calm as possible here. But then you have someone like Frank, who's just he's off the charts because as far as he's concerned, okay, this has got it. We got to take care of this. This isn't. He's backing up the train. Trains all the way to the Bronx. That's the answer. Have you ever been on this train?
This yes. I've taken the six train many times. I've been on most of the trains in Manhattan. In fact, there was a point where I was interning somewhere between college and between high school and college. I was interning at a with a TV production company, and I would actually take the 6 train to 23rd
Oh
Street
wow. Interesting. You wouldn't have
from
gotten there
From the Staten Island Ferry, you'd pick up the 4 or the 5, and then usually transfer to the 6.
Okay. And do you know that the bit of trivia about the fact that they because of superstition there has not been over the last 51 years a Palom 123?
Oh, really? Oh, that's
Yes, they have.
interesting.
They
I
might have
was
a
not
Palom
aware of that.
121 or a Palom 122, but there won't be a Palom 123 because it does leave the Palom Street station. It leaves and gets there. So there are Palom trains, but just not 123. So even though I think I read that the MTA denies that it's on purpose, but I don't believe that. Not for a second. It's like,
Sure, it's
why
probably
ask
just an
for
un
it, you know?
yeah, it's probably just an unwritten rule.
Exactly. There's certain things just stay away.
Yes.
Right, so did you have anything else you wanted to say about this particular minute?
No. Some good chat.
Okay, well, I think it is, because like I said, I think it gives us more insight into these three characters about who they are.
Absolutely.
All right.
Yes.
So every Monday we have a segment called Matthau Monday, where my guests will give their top five Walter Matthau performances. So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
All right, so my number five is Coach Morris Buttermaker in the Bad News Bears. Number four, Max Goldman in Grumpy Old Men. Number three would be Mr. Wilson in Dennis the Menace. Childhood favorite. Number two is Oscar Madison in The Odd Couple. And number three is Lieutenant Garber in The Taking of Pelham
Number
One,
one, you
Two,
mean?
Three. Yes, my number one is is Lieutenant Garber. I will say I did want to try to see Charlie Varrick, which is a movie that came out around this
Yes.
time that I've heard great things about, and I was not able to find a free copies on any of the streaming services that I have.
Well, I have faith in you that you'll
So
eventually find a way to watch it. So.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure.
I it's a movie that I do need to rewatch also. It's been a while since I've seen it, probably about 10 years,
Yes.
and I for me it deserves a rewatch also.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, were there any surprises in those five for you?
Surprises that they came from you, or surprises in general?
Yes, in general.
Well, again, I would no. I was just a little surprised that the Bad News Bears was so low. But that's fine, you know, because
Okay.
I always think of Buttermaker as a very iconic character, but yeah,
Yes,
I think
absolutely.
you know, and Dennis the Menace goes perfectly with your age range, you know, so I'm from you know.
Yeah, that was definitely the first time I became aware of Walter Matthau. And I feel that yeah, and I feel that movie's underrated.
Okay, I mean,
Or underappreciated, put it that way.
underappreciated. Okay, I can sort of understand that. Again, I didn't like Dennis in that one. I'm trying to remember the kid's name, but he was just really annoying. But again, that's what it's supposed to be. So,
Yes.
I don't really know how you can actually, you know, say that, but.
Yeah. Well, they couldn't get Macaulay Culkin, so
He was probably a little too old to play that character at that point. That would be my guess.
But I feel like it was right in that alley with Home Alone, and
Well, Home Alone came out in
it was
90, and
between
Dennis the Menace, I think, came out, if I remember correctly, came out in 93 or 94.
yeah,
93, right?
93.
So, you know,
Yeah.
it sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that's the way. All right. Thank you very much for that list. And we will now play the daily game of Name That Remake, which is a game
Okay.
that I set up that we will be playing every day. I will randomly
Sure.
be choosing a movie that was remade. I will give you the year that the original came out and the year of the remake, and I will give you a brief synopsis, and you have to try and guess what movie it is. Simple, simple.
Okay.
All right, so
Okay.
I will spin the wheel because
Sure.
I have no idea what movie you're going to get, and I'm randomly going to be choosing a
Okay.
movie to see what we're going to get that Eddie's going to have to try and guess.
Okay.
Just got to say, you missed the Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3 by like one. It was the it was slowing down at that point on the wheel, and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to deal with that one when I eventually get to it, but I will have to.
Okay.
So the original movie came out in 1961, And the remake was done in 1997.
Okay.
Okay, and it's about a scientist who creates an anti-gravity substance that a businessman tries to steal away from him.
Anti-gravity substance businessman tries to steal. 1997. Okay, I believe these
Yes,
have
they do.
different titles. Okay, so the original is The Absent-Minded Professor, and the remake is
Excellent. See,
Flubber.
that's great. I'm glad you were able to figure that one
Yeah.
out. All right. Excellent. So, Eddie, would you like to tell people where they can find Eddie Eyth?
Sure, yeah, I'm on Twitter at Eddie Eyth for right now. Yeah, I'm kind of in a bit of a hiatus from public comments, but just kind of relaxing right now, but I'm hoping to get more active
All
by the
right,
next year or so.
excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movierob.net. Until tomorrow, achoo.
Gesundheit.